Hello, everybody. Thank you for being with us for the Hour for America Trends. I'm Amy Fuller. We sure are happy you've come along with us. Coming up, we're going to have the host of the Heart of America show, Michael Hart. He is also the author of Unknown America, so he probably knows a bunch of stuff that we don't, that we should have learned in school. So we'll see about that and also talk about the political headlines of the day. And of course, there are many. Also tonight, Dr. Arlen Diamond of Diamond & Associates. She's an expert in workplace processes. She helps people from corporate boards, CEOs on down to, well, everybody. And we're going to talk to her about the death of the sick day. People aren't taking them like they should necessarily, and are they on the way out? So isn't that interesting? Also tonight, we're going to talk about trending in the news, that huge fentanyl bust at the southern border, a bust with enough drugs to kill millions and millions of Americans. It is indeed a record-breaking bust. A scam of a truckload of cucumbers has netted the biggest fentanyl bust in the U.S. history, 254 pounds. Could kill 57 to some say 100 million people. Agents were alerted by a drug-sniffing dog to the presence of the fentanyl worth 3.5 million and almost 400 pounds of meth worth 1.18 million. Could have netted traffickers over 100 million in sales. Incredible work, but imagine some are saying how much more they'd be able to stop with a wall and increased border security. The deadly polar vortex will be giving way to warmer temperatures in coming hours and coming days for sure. It did affect 75% of the U.S.'s population in and around the Midwest, under 0 degrees for that many people. The hardest hit areas seeing feels like conditions of negative 50 to 60 degrees. Now being blamed for at least 20 deaths and more than 80,000 people are homeless in Chicago, by the way, alone during this polar vortex. So a good Samaritan is getting lauded for taking it upon herself to pay for hotel rooms for dozens of homeless people. Others followed suit and perhaps saved many lives. But warmer, they say it could be feeling like spring early next week in the Midwest. So that's what's ahead. Cory Booker has announced he will be running for the Democratic nomination for president for 2020. Booker, 49, is the former mayor of Newark, New Jersey, and will no doubt talk a lot about how he built up the community there in coming months. He actually talked a little bit about it today, speaking from his neighborhood as he made his declaration.
We used to be a people that can point into the sky and look at the moon and change it from a dream to a destiny. There's no Republican or Democratic way to get there. You definitely don't get there by fighting each other, beating each other down, dividing people against themselves. We did those things because we found our common ground. Now, this is not easy. It's the tough work of building a great community, or what King called the beloved community. It's hard to do that. But it's about time we get to the hard work of building this nation to be who we want us to be, our best values, our best ideals, the best of who we are. We need leadership in this country that understands what patriotism means. And patriotism is love of country. And you can't love your country unless you love your fellow countrymen and women. Doesn't mean we're always going to agree or some days always like each other. But we got to extend each other grace, less judgment, and more hard work to find common ground to do the things that other people on the planet Earth don't think we can do. We're a nation that leads, and we've got to get back to doing that together. So I'm happy to answer any questions you all want, but I'm grateful, seriously grateful, to have you all in Newark. For those of you who only passed through our airport, take some time to the downtown and see the new buildings we've built, the new hotels. Go up the street, see the new supermarket we put in place. See the schools that are now rank us as the number one city in America for beat the odds schools. High poverty, high performance. We're doing great things.
Senator.
My old friend.
You've never invited me to your house.
And after this, I'm going to tell you to get off my stairs. Get off my lawn.
Most of the Democrats I've talked to are skeptical about your message of love. They say that man cannot live on love alone, and they wonder if you're ready to take on a hard-nosed Donald Trump.
Well, I called on Cruz first because when I was mayor, he gave me my most difficult questions. I started... The people I admire are the people that lead by calling out the best of who we are and not the worst. So I'm running for president because I believe in us. I believe in these values. I'm going to put them before the American people. Hey, and if that's not what they want, then I won't be the next president of the United States. But I know my country. I know the goodness and the decency across this land. I've experienced it. My family, I'm in New Jersey because of that decency of white families who would not let my parents be denied housing because of the color of their skin. That's the kind of patriotism. That's the kind of love my family's experienced. I know it exists in our country. I believe in it. I'm putting my faith in that message, that heart, and that reality in America.
Senator Cory Booker announcing he will, well, he has now thrown his hat into the ring for the 2020 Democratic presidential nomination. He is the former mayor of Newark, New Jersey, and very happy to say he built up that community. Talks a lot about that. And we are joined tonight to chat about this and all kinds of political headlines of the day with our friend of the show, Michael Hart. He is host of Heart of America, you can hear daily, and also the author of a terrific book that you must have in your library and give to friends. Give it to your Valentine in a couple weeks. It is called Unknown America, and it's got all kinds of facts and interesting stories about the greatest country in the land that we probably should have learned in school but didn't or possibly learned wrong. Michael Hart, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Amy. How are you?
I'm great. Before we talk about Senator Booker, so what was the most interesting thing from your book that stands out when you think, I can't wait when people read it for them to learn about this? Is there one or are there several?
Well, there's actually several. You know, you and I have talked about that a couple of different occasions. It's pretty much everything in American history is contrived or revised or repackaged, whatever the case may be. So pretty much everything that we understand about this country is wrong. So it really kind of depends on what you're most interested in, from the Declaration of Independence leading all the way up to the last election. So there's something in it for everybody.
Do you ever wonder what your book, Unknown America, will be like when you do, you know, volume six in 40 years, if the Democrats get control and everyone does decide walls are immoral and we were on the wrong side of history, those who wanted to protect the country from terrorists? I mean, it's just a lot of craziness, right?
Well, you know, there is an awful lot of fake news that goes on in the world, and Donald Trump's right about that, and you and I have talked about it as well. Thomas Jefferson also brought that up. But the amount of it that we're creating today, because much of what's wrong in our history books was actually perpetrated by the media, whether it's culpability or the fact that they were just being lazy. But the fact is that so much of what's being reported today is, in fact, you know, incorrect. And I don't know. There's no sort of way that book is going to be thicker than Tolstoy's War and Peace.
So is. And the book I want to write called Fake News, and I'll just never get to it because you don't know where to start and don't know where to finish. There's just no end. So Michael Hart, Cory Booker announced today, Friday, if you're watching our first iteration of America Trends. And, you know, I thought he sounded nice and humble. And he said, if they want me, good. If not, fine. But he didn't sound as annoying as some people who throw their hats in the ring and just right away you're just like nails on a chalkboard. And you wonder, a lot of people are saying, did he hurry and announce this on a Friday because Kamala Harris announced last Sunday and he wanted to not let her get so much more momentum because people are saying she could be the front runner for the Democrats. And of course, CNN gave her that love fest town hall Monday night.
Well, you know, Cory Booker, he sounded like a man that's prepared to lose because, you know, at least in the case of Harris, she came out. She thinks she has a legitimate chance to pull this thing out. Now, I think, you know, the CEO from Starbucks, Schultz, is going to have something to say about that. But Cory Booker, it almost sounded like he was hedging his bets. Like, well, if you want me, I'll do it. If I've got nothing better to do, you know, if I can't get a date that weekend, I'll show up. So it was just very noncommittal on his part, I thought.
Maybe he's still humbled from his big Spartacus moment during the Kavanaugh hearings when he just, I mean, I don't know if he'll ever live that down. It'll be a while if he does.
Well, the one thing I will say about Cory Booker is at the very least, he seems to learn his lessons vis-a-vis the Spartacus moment. I think he realizes that too much is, well, oftentimes too much. Where Kamala Harris, she's drunk on the fame, the power, and the attention. She is, you know, like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, they are just punch drunk with all the attention that they're getting. I don't know that that's a great way to base a presidential campaign, but time will tell. She'll flush out as well.
You just wonder sometimes people, you wonder if they can't see whether it's a senator throwing her hat into the ring for president or newscasters. When they get a little too bit impressed with themselves, does it grate on them? I wonder because some people just They just love it. And speaking of Howard Schultz, bigwig with Starbucks, the Democrats are freaking out because they're wondering if it could give, President Trump another 4 years if he wouldn't have it already. And Michael Moore, for now, in case you're waiting to know what he wants to think, he thinks everyone should boycott Starbucks until he steps away and says, I'm not going to. Boy, Howard Schultz got yelled at by the ladies on The View this week.
Yeah, I mean, Schultz is he's the dark horse, obviously, but he's also the spoiler. And so it looks like the Democrats may finally get their Ross Perot. The funny thing is about Schultz is that, if he ran as a Democrat, I mean, he's a legitimate contender. And so this whole idea that the party has moved too far left for him and it's left this bad taste in his mouth, I don't know how I feel about him running as an independent. I think he should give it a shot as a Democrat and try to write the ship and bring the party back into the center, or at least a little less left than it currently is. But he will definitely catapult Donald Trump into the White House if he gains any momentum.
Do you think he'll stick around?
If you had asked me that question about Donald Trump before, I would have said probably not. But we are in the age of the celebrity politician, the celebrity president. Barack Obama, obviously kind of set the table for that. I think, and you got to bear in mind also, number one, he's unemployed. He's got nothing to do. He's got $5 billion in the bank. So, what else is he going to do? Play golf every day of the week? We can do that on Tuesday and Thursday. Wednesday and Friday, we'll run for president. Why not?
That's another reason why Democrats are so petrified, besides the fact that he could, split the vote in a way they don't want, or, triplicate the vote, however you want to say it. But he's got that money to stay in there. Okay,
he
Michael.
Does.
Yeah. Were you going to? I didn't want to interrupt you, Michael. Did we lose Michael?
No.
Okay, we're going to have Michael back here. We're actually going to keep him for another segment because, Michael, we've got a few more things. Oh, now he just said he's speaking another language, you guys. So we're actually going to hold him over anyway. It's got a hard break coming up. But want to tell you what we're going to chat about. We're going to chat about Liz Warren. She has apologized now for causing confusion with her mention of being part of the Cherokee Nation. And they've accepted her apology, so we'll chat a little bit about that. And the State of the Union's coming up Tuesday. President Trump is giving some hints as to what he will talk about and what he might say concerning the wall. So stay with America Trends. I'm Amy Fuller. We're so glad you're with us. Back with Michael Hart after this.
I've already claimed asylum. I'm seeking asylum. I'm seeking asylum. We are seeking asylum. Lord Loomer and I and Nancy Pelosi.
He's got to go to his inauguration.
I tried and he deported us from the inauguration. I mean, from the swearing in. And I screamed for sanctuary, but now we're screaming for asylum.
I object.
There is no.
We need asylum. We need asylum.
We're on this side.
Gavin! Gavin! Mi amigo! Mi amigo Gavin! We need your sanctuary! Okay.
So bad. We're back with Michael Hart. Now, Michael, I'm going to have you pipe up on this, but that's Ben Bergwam and Laura Loomer. Laura's an independent conservative journalist that goes around and does things like these. They were at Gavin Newsom's house, the new governor of California, and they were asking to be let through his wall and in to visit with him a little bit, and they've done this at Pelosi's place, too. And I just thought it was a little bit of fun video to share. Probably get in a bunch of trouble with the PC crowd, right?
Absolutely. Well, you know you will. You're going to always get in trouble because you can't do anything right.
Well, Gavin Newsom, for his part, and there's video of them climbing over the walls before they, and they said, if you stay, we're going to have to arrest you, and then they eventually did. Gavin Newsom said walls are immoral, and of course he advocates for the open border. So lots of fun there on Twitter if you follow Laura Loomer there. So just had to share that. President Trump today, again, if you're watching on Friday, said that he said, his actual words were listen closely to the State of the Union. I think you'll find it very exciting. And so he indicates he may announce, he sort of indicated today that there's a very good chance he could declare a national emergency and just start building the wall himself.
Well, you know, at this stage of the game, Amy, something's got to give, because the American public is not going to sit still very long for another shutdown. Now, the idea that you know, he was able to, you know, capitulate a little bit and kind of cave for Nancy Pelosi and the gang to get some folks paid, I understand that strategy. It has the potential to backfire on him if he doesn't, in fact, make this move to get the wall built. And, you know, earlier today, he also brought Hungary and Israel into the equation, and a couple of other countries where the leadership in those nations have made it pretty clear that, in fact, walls do indeed work. And so now it's going to be very interesting what the optic is going to be spun in terms of what Pelosi is going to say, because I guarantee you the State of the Union is going to, it's not going to be so much the State of the Union as much as it's the State of the Wall, because it's going to be an entire campaign, you know, an hour and a half long, however long it goes with it, for the purposes of making his case. And that's exactly what it's going to be. And what I'm really looking forward to is the Democratic response, especially if they bring Cortez into it.
Stacey Abrams, who lost for, I believe it was governor of mm-hmm. Georgia, they said we'll be giving the response, so we'll see if anyone joins her. And I'm sure all the talking heads will be there, as you say. But Trump also indicated he will be talking about the sanctity of life. And boy, you know, we can joke around and show these funny Laura Loomer videos, but mm-hmm. right now we are talking about something that makes your blood run cold. And Virginia, for its fact, could be joining New York in repealing restrictions on abortion right up to the moment of birth. So right. Seconds before a child is born. So I just want to go over a few things. That includes terminations up until the moment under the provisions of a bill backed by Governor Ralph Northam and a substantial number of Democratic lawmakers. And I want you to listen to Kathy Tran here for our viewers, and I know you've heard it too. This is an extended clip. I want you to be able to hear all of it, even the uncomfortable pauses, as Tran has asked some very tough questions. So let's take a listen right now.
Abortions.
Delegate Tran.
Yes, sir.
How late in a pregnancy would your bill apply if a physician was simply willing to certify that the continuation of the pregnancy would impair the mental health of the woman? How late are we talking about?
So the way the suggestion that we've made in the bill is to say it's in the third trimester and at the, you know, with the certification of the physician. So
how late in the third trimester would you be able to do that?
You know, it's very unfortunate that our physicians, witnesses, were not able to attend today to speak specifically.
No, I'm talking about your bill. How late in the third trimester could a physician perform an abortion if he indicated it would impair the mental health of the woman?
Or physical health.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm talking about the mental health.
So, I mean, through the third trimester. The third trimester goes all the way up to 40 weeks.
Okay. But to the end of the third trimester.
Yep. I don't think we have a limit in the bill.
So, where it's obvious that a woman is about to give birth, she has physical signs that she is about to give a birth, would that still be a point at which she could request an abortion if she was so certified? She's dilating.
Mr. Chairman, that would be a decision that the doctor, the physician, and the woman would
make at that
point. I
understand that. I'm asking if your bill allows that.
My bill would allow that, yes.
Delegate Kathy Tran of Virginia. It's called the Repeal Act. And Michael, the verbiage that some of these Democrats use who want this, not all of them, some of them do want it, is that they want to give women more rights for reproductive health and with their own bodies. But we know that a child has its own DNA, its own blood. And we know that we just had some twins born in Iowa that were viable at 4 months and were born prematurely mm-hmm. and are still living to this day. And if you want to get into what happens when they abort a child at this late date, and you think you can stand to find out the truth, get online and look it up. But Michael, what have we come to?
You know, Amy, I have covered this story many times in the last few days. And the argument from the left has always been that a child up to a certain point, which particularly if it's not viable, is not a living life. You know, we've talked about the heartbeat, brain activity, et cetera. The conversation.
And also a nervous system where you can
right.
feel the pain that happens.
Absolutely.
When you kill the child in utero.
Well, the thing is that we've morphed beyond the fact that we don't really know when it's life from their perspective to it's okay to take a life if it's inconvenient or if there is some, you know, the bill in New York in particular, and Virginia, by the way, is even worse than New York. It allows for one physician as opposed to three. They also allow for nurse practitioners or midwives to make these decisions. But we have gone beyond the idea of when does life begin to when can we take a life? And we have, in the last week or so, become legitimately a culture of death in this country. Now, as I understand it, five other state legislatures are also considering a very similar move. The bill is so bad in Virginia that the co-author, her name is Adams, has already backtracked and says she
right.
wished she never signed the darn thing because she didn't know what was contained in it. Then you got the governor coming out talking about reproductive rights. I don't know if you saw this, but late on Friday afternoon, a report came out from his yearbook. They Kavanaugh'd him and found a picture on his page, on Northam's page, of two people, one in blackface and the other in a KKK hood. Presumably, the governor is one or the other. So they're talking out of not only both sides of their mouth, but every orifice they have on their body. But at the end of the day, they have all but admitted that murder is acceptable, and they are setting the conditions for murder.
Michael, I appreciate your time and you're talking about this hard subject. I invite anyone, you need to know what's going on in Virginia, New York. It could be coming to a state near you. Find out the facts. Michael Hart, thanks so much.
I get up.
No.
I have a test today.
No.
I have to take it. I want to go to a good college so I can have a fruitful life.
Annie, you're not going to school like this now.
Oh, fine. What's this? What's his problem?
He doesn't feel well.
Yeah, right. Dry that one out. You can fertilize the lawn.
Jeannie? Is that you?
Welcome back to America Trends. Glad to have you along for the hour. I'm Amy Fuller, your host. You know, we are in the midst of cold and flu season, and there's a recent New York Times article that just caught our eye, called "The Death of the Sick Day," and at issue, more and more people. They refrain from taking sick days because they want to get ahead in the workplace or they think they're being strong or whatever. But you know what? It just gets everyone sick in the office, right? That's what I think. Anyway, we have an expert with us tonight, our friend of the show, Dr. Arlen Diamond. She
Hi,
is
Bill.
The
president.
Hello? Hi, doctor. How are you?
Fine. That's Belle.
Oh, I love this. I love the added attraction of it's Belle, you say?
This is Belle, right? Yeah.
Well, I want to tell you, Dr. Diamond is the president and founder of Diamond Associates, and she has decades of experience in workplace processes and helping management get the best out of their employees and having their employees be the best. She's got some great books under her belt we're going to talk about in a little while. But Dr. Diamond, what did you think of this article? I mean, it's not the first time we've said, hey, you know, people really aren't taking off their sick days. It's probably the same people that aren't taking them and then maybe the people who are taking too many sick days.
I think it's a real problem, but I think we have come to expect that our employer has responsibility for our lives in all kinds of ways other than paying us a salary for the work that we do. So when I read the article, you know, I had mixed feelings about it. One, of course, I think people should take off when they're sick. No question about it, because otherwise you're going to be miserable, you're not going to do a good job, and most importantly, you may infect others. See if I can get my cat out of the way. But on the other hand, I mean, you sign a contract when you enter an employment contract. So the contract specifies what your job description is, what they expect of you, and what they're going to give you in exchange. And one of the things that I teach is how to negotiate during, you know, during the interview process. You know, they accept you, they say they want you, and now your terms are somewhat negotiable. And so if what you want is to be able to have a certain amount of sick days, or, and I want to talk about that term in a minute because I don't like it, but a certain amount of days that you have that you can take off, negotiate that in your contract. Because from the employer's point of view, there is a certain amount of cost associated with having you employed by them. And that cost is the taxes they pay, the insurance they pay, the desk you sit at, you know, the rent they pay, whatever it may be. Those are costs that all go into what's called the package, the compensation.
Sure, every employer, it's a cost and a risk for them with every employee they take on.
Right, right. But depending obviously on how many employees there are in a company, depending on what that job is, in part determines how flexible employers can be in allowing you time off. But you know, as I was waiting for you to call, I was thinking about this topic, and one of the thoughts that occurred to me is: supposing you have a flu epidemic, and they're all airline traffic controllers. We would put all airplanes to the ground in any particular area if everybody stayed home sick that day. Mm-hmm. So there's problems either way. And I frankly believe that we should get rid of the term sick days. And I think that in part of the compensation package, we should negotiate how many flexible days off a year anybody can have.
That's interesting. I want to hear more about it, but I'm not quite sure even how many, is there a norm for how many sick days a person gets a year or half a year or whatever? Do they do it by that?
No, everybody's different. Some will do it quarterly, some will do it by a year, some will do it a half year. But I think it's someplace between 5 and 10, depending on how generous the firm is. Mm-hmm. Five being more typical. But the larger the firm, the more people doing the same job, the easier it is, obviously, for the employer to let somebody take time off. So it's a negotiation. It's a problem for both sides, because certainly if you're sick, you want to take time off. But again, you know, I can remember when I worked for other people when I was much younger, and I was dating a guy that was in the military. And when Sonny came in on leave, you betcha if I couldn't take time off, I would have taken time off to be with him. And you know, if you have to lie and say it's sick days, that's really a shame. But if you can just say I'm taking a personal day and not have to justify why that personal day, I think you're in much better shape. And I think that, you know, the world is better. People don't have to lie. They don't have to pretend. Employers don't have to act like cops, you know?
Well, yeah, you've got this huge pedigree, and your clients range from boards of directors and upper management to support staff in so many industries over so many years that it's interesting you would have that take that there should be flex days or personal days instead of just sick days.
Yeah, I mean, you can, you know, if you think about what a typical, let's say a larger company, just make it simple, larger companies typically have what they call cafeteria style or a smorgasbord of you can have this insurance policy or you can do this or you can have this. And ultimately, you pick and choose to add up to a predetermined amount. And that predetermined amount is part of your overall compensation package. Smaller companies don't have the wherewithal, the flexibility to give you all those options. They may only have, say, one insurance policy. But it's how many days you're allowed off a year, whether it's vacation or sick or flex or personal, is part of that package that you're negotiating. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't realize that they do have a certain amount of negotiation power. But it comes to what I'm saying is it comes to an X amount of dollars. And how that amount of dollars is broken up is less important to the employer than it is to the employee who may perhaps want more vacation and less personal time. And if you didn't have to put a label on it, let's say, for example, that you're allowed 2 weeks vacation and 5 days, which would be 1 week, of sick. But you want to take 3 weeks of vacation, or you want to take 1 week of vacation and have the other time because you have a kid that gets sick often and you're a single parent.
Well, that's a whole other thing. When you have a child, they get sick all the time. Poor things.
True. Aww.
Well, yeah, there's so much that goes into it. I suppose it's different for just every employee. I'll bet there are some that the employer or the company is saying, stay home, don't infect others, but others are just trying to get them in and to stop calling in sick so much, I guess. Well, that lady just has a little sniffle.
Yeah.
Hey, doctor, you know what? We have picked up. We're now on Biz Talk Radio right now, and we're now in over 175 countries. So I'd like to keep you over and talk with you in the next segment more about this and also about everything that you do in your book so we can introduce you to our new audience. Can we hold you
over? I'd love it. Absolutely love it.
Okay, we'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Arlen Diamond, president and founder of Diamond Associates. 24-karat magic in the air. Welcome back. Is everybody happy and healthy? We are hoping so. We're hoping you're taking your vitamins, getting proper rest. We're here with Dr. Arlen Diamond of Diamond and Associates. We're chatting about the death of the sick day. And, you know, if we take better care of ourselves, doctor, we can, get to work and be healthy and not spread germs and all that stuff. But we just talked in the last segment, and you think it's good for them to, for companies to have flex days or personal days rather than sick days. Have companies been doing that more and more in recent years?
I don't know the answer to that. I do know some companies do it, and certainly not unique idea of
mine. Well, there's Belle again.
I know. I'm trying desperately to keep her off me. Belle took her collar off yesterday, and I found it in my bed this morning. So life just kind of goes on with these cats.
I love that you've got a cat in the world. I wish we could get a cat in the studio.
Cats are wonderful things.
It's good for the workplace environment, right?
No, even there, people are bringing their pets to work. I get to bring my pets to work, which is kind of cool. She and her brother are hysterically funny. So, you know, they're fun to have. And they actually add to your mental health. So
they do. We love pets here. And we're going to have John Van Zandt in later this week talking about what to do. There's all kinds of, you know, there's all these pet days and months coming up. So we're going to tell you it's like walk your dog day or something like that. And John always tells us that. And we'll have an adoptable dog for you. So thank you for giving those cats a home, Doc.
They're wonderful. They're truly wonderful. But to answer your question from before, I think more companies are realizing that rather than labeling it, they just need to, you know, decide X amount of days that, you know, you can take off as long as you're not doing it at some critical time. You know, part of the problem, of course, is people are valuable. The work they do is valuable. And when they're absent, it's costing the company, not just the whatever their pay rate is, but it's costing the company some valuable time in terms of what they're doing. And they may be holding up a big project. You don't know. So the guy that says, you know, I've never taken a sick day in 20 years, that happens for a lot of people, is that they take their work seriously enough, whereby short of, you know, being in the hospital, they do show up at work. You know, people take their responsibilities seriously and other people take their responsibilities less seriously. And some people you can spare more easily than others. I mean, that does make them less valuable, but it depends on what they're doing at, you know, at what point in time. And so people who take personal days, if they're responsible, tend to take into account what they're working on and what deadlines are and try not to take personal days where it's going to significantly affect other people's work as well as their own.
I get really envious of people's healthy immune systems. You know, it also makes me sort of wonder about people who have or develop chronic diseases, perhaps once they've already been employed by the company. That's probably a whole other segment, huh?
Yeah, I mean, you have the whole disability, you know, coming into play, and the ADA requirements for reasonable accommodations, And the word reasonable means different things to different people.
Hmm. All right, Dr. Diamond. You know what? As I mentioned, we are now so proud to be on Biz Talk Radio in 175 different countries, along with our U2 America TV audience, which is over 100 million houses. And I just wanted everyone to know a little bit about you, because you... you've got this vast background, you've got these amazing books, and you do these boot camps all the time to help people with, like, stuff on the front lines, real life stuff. Here's the please and thank you of fundraising for nonprofits. Yeah, you deal with not just businesses, but nonprofits and 15 essential ingredients for success. When was that book written?
Oh, more than 10 years ago, 10, 15 years ago, I think.
Culture.
This is a more recent book. Mm-hmm. This one, especially, Amy, now that you're dealing with people from other countries.
Let me say the title, Culture Inside the Company and Outside the Country by Dr. Arlen Diamond, available on Amazon and all booksellers. Go ahead, doctor.
Yeah, no, this would be an important book for anybody doing business with people from other countries, because it talks about expectations, it talks about different primary values, it talks about standing too close or too far away, you know, being emotional, not being emotional, whether contracts are just handshakes or, like here in the United States, the 400,000 pages of complicated minutiae, you know? It's an easy read, and it's a good book as a primer, I guess, for anyone working in different countries.
Well, we are so global, and there are little things you wouldn't even think. In Japan, the one that comes off the top of your head is, in Japan, when someone hands you a business card, you treat it with respect. You don't just stuff it in your pocket, things like that.
All through Asia. Yeah, and I recently was hosting a group of Chinese dignitaries. I had them meet our city council and our, you know, business and planning department and our mayor. And the Chinese delegation came with gifts for everyone they met. I got a gift, the mayor got a gift, you know, various and sundry people that, whereas we don't expect that. And the mayor, who's a smart lady, she quickly ran back to her office and found something, some token thing that she could give them back as a gift. But it's not our normal way of doing business. It is in most of the Asian cultures. You give a gift as part, and I'm not talking about a big expensive thing, but you give a gift as part of your entertaining or being entertained.
Well, I like the idea for that book anyway. Years ago, when I first heard about that business card, I thought, well, that's a good thing to do no matter where you are. It shows respect, and it's a good idea all around. How many books do you have in all, Doc?
I've got 6 published books, plus my master's thesis, plus my doctoral dissertation.
Oh, my goodness.
But the 6 of that we're talking about are business books. Mm-hmm. And one of them is a leadership book, one is a culture book. The most recent book, thank you for flashing this, the most recent book is about how to investigate a complaint. You know, since the Me Too movement.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
Sure.
You do know. Since the Me Too movement, complaints have been just popping up everywhere. And due process is lost, unfortunately. And so we need to get back to due process. We need to do neutral investigations. We need to stop being afraid that we're going to be frowned upon if we don't find guilt, because sometimes accusations are false.
That's exactly right. Doc, you know what? We're short on, it's always, time always flies with you. But I invite people to go to diamondassociates.net to find out more about you. You have business will hire, and check out her books too, and these boot camps she always has. Diamondassociates.net. Doctor, thank you so much.
Amy, thank you. It's a pleasure.
We'll see you next time.
He's your baby.
What? What?
Hey, everyone. I'm your host, Amy Fuller. You are with America Trends on the U2 America TV network and Biz Talk Radio. Glad to have you along wherever you are. I want to thank the people who help it make it go around. Sully Sullivan, Chris Janikas, Jared Coleman, Curtis Matovich. Appreciate all of you. Yeah. And our guest for tonight, Michael Hart of the Heart of America show. He's got a great book, Unknown America. Check it out. And also, Dr. Arlen Diamond talking about the death of the sixth day. Say it ain't so. Finally tonight, you have it trending on YouTube. You always love Conan O'Brien and his funny antics. He visits a Samuel Adams brewery and he finds out he'd rather drink the beer than learn all about it. Listen in as we say goodbye for now.
Hey there, this is exciting. I'm in Jamaica Plain, Boston, and I'm at the site of the Samuel Adams Brewery. Why am I here? Well, Sam Adams sponsored my tour. No money changed hands today, okay? I'm here as a fan. We got the check last week. These people think this is a hotel and they're checking in. It's not a hotel, it's a brewery. I don't know why you have luggage. You're insane, you're going to a brewery, it's not a hotel. This is Jim Cook. Jim, good to meet you.
Welcome to our brewery.
Thank you. He's the founder and brewer here at Sam Adams. You've been at this for quite a while.
34 years.
34 years.
Longer than you've been drinking.
No. I started drinking when I was 1 year old. So, listen, what's going on? You walk into the brewery and what's sitting here but two Sam Adams?
Well, of course.
Did you have to go to the Samuel Adams family to license the name?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
That guy signed the Declaration of Independence.
If you're a public figure, when you die, your name enters the public domain.
But, for example, I could start selling the Abraham Lincoln vape pen. It's great that you have all of this, excuse me, hold on a sec. Top me off. I'm going faster than you. Can you top me off there, pal? You've got a little problem here on the floor. Hold on. No, I get it.
Are you going to the brewery?
Yeah.
Beer has been around for 10,000 years. Human beings went from, like, wandering around, gathering roots and berries, killing small animals, to settling down in villages. They settled down to make beer. They grew grain. And the best way to get the nutritional value from the grain is sterile and clean. So, like 12,000 years ago in Mesopotamia, people started growing grain. The life then started to bubble, and after 4 or 5 days, it stopped, and they could drink it. Nothing that's harmful to human beings can grow in beer. When the Mayflower left Plymouth, England.
Jim, I'm going to stop you for a second. You got to tighten it up a little bit.
That's 12,000 years in 30
seconds.
Yeah, you're
taking me day by day, Jim.
All right.
Where are we now? Mesopotamia?
We're at the Pilgrim.
Oh, we're at the Pilgrim.
They came over here.
Hey, all right.
They put no water on the Mayflower, only beer.
Right.
And they founded a nation. They didn't drink it. Mojitos and daiquiris and Chardonnay. They founded a nation on beer.
Jim, you're getting belligerent.
I'm standing up for beer.
I get it.
You want me to tell you what's going on here?
I really don't. If you told me what's going on here, I think I'd take my own life.
And this is Bob Cannon. He's one of our brewers, 25 years.
Have you ever listened to Jim tell you about the history of beer?
I've known Jim for 25 years. I've heard it more than once, absolutely.
Really? So you've heard it twice if it's 25 years. That's a long story. I'm interested in learning what beer's made of.
Hops act as a preservative. Hops are the closest botanical relative to marijuana.